Yes.
And Mike Lane. The Transportation Policy Committee will come to order. And we do have a quorum. And Representative Rosenthal, would you like to approve the minutes? Have you had a chance to look at them?
So moved.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Rosenthal moves approval of the minutes. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say same sign. The motion passes. And the, pardon? The minutes of February 20th stand approved. We'd like to invite Representative Kahn. Okay, the first item on the agenda today will be a presentation from, I'm sorry, a presentation from the City of Minneapolis. I apologize.
I was just going to get up and say that. So.
Okay, relating to bicycle motor vehicle crashes. And again, welcome to the committee. Please come forward and state your name for the tape.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is John Wirches from the City of Minneapolis. I'm the Director of Traffic and Parking Services for the City in the Public Works Department. And we're glad to be here today. We've been spending considerable time addressing pedestrian and bicycle safety in our city. Today I brought along with me Sean Murphy from our office, who is going to overview our recent study that we've just completed related to bicycle crash history in the City of Minneapolis. So, Sean?
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Sean Murphy. I'm the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator for the City of Minneapolis. And each of you, I believe, has a two-page handout, which is called Understanding Bicyclists, Motorists, Crashes in Minneapolis. I'm going to hit a few of what I believe to be are the most important points from this handout. Because bicycling is a more popular form of transportation, not only in Minneapolis, but also in the whole state of Minnesota, compared to other states and large cities in the country, we have undertaken a bicycle crash research project. And we examined about 3,000 crash reports from the years 2000 to 2010, which were submitted to the State Department of Public Safety by our enforcement officials in Minneapolis. And I'm going to jump around a little bit on this first side of the sheet. The reason why we did this, right below the points numbered 1, 2, 3, you'll find this reasoning written out, is to inform the development of bicycle-related infrastructure, so bike lanes, bike paths, as well as to inform our enforcement officials on which are the leading factors of crashes between bikes and cars, and other education and policy-related changes we could make. So that was the purpose of doing this report. Before I get into those numbered 1, 2, 3 conclusions from the report, I just want to mention that the bright spot of this report is that we've seen a safety in numbers effect in Minneapolis. We have, and this is most well illustrated probably by the chart at the bottom of the first page. You'll see a bar graph in the background and then a couple of line graphs or lines across the graph in front of that. And the conclusion here is that as bicycling has increased, crashes have not. So you can see that the number of people biking to work in Minneapolis, those are the gray bars, those have been going up over the past two decades. So the number of people has increased from about 3,000 to about 8,000 every day, people in Minneapolis biking to work. And at the same time, the number of our crashes have stayed steady. So the number of crashes that get reported to our police departments, that's the red line. We have about 300 crashes a year. So therefore, people's chances of getting in a crash, the crash rate has more than halved in that time period. So we know things are getting safer. That was the main conclusion. But at the same time, there's still a lot of crashes every year, and so we want to look at what's going into those crashes. So we found that these are complex events, and there's no one factor that contributes to these crashes. But with that said, the three primary conclusions are that most crashes are occurring at intersections along major busy streets where there's a lot of car traffic. The second one is that motorists are not seeing or yielding to bicyclists when they have the contribution into the crash, or the contributing factor is another way of saying that. And the third is that bicyclists are not riding in a predictable manner when they are contributing to the crash. So if you flip the two-pager over, if you're following along with me, in the upper left-hand corner and the upper right-hand corner, we have some text and another bar graph that actually goes into the percentage of bicyclists contributing to a crash and the percentage of motorists contributing to a crash. And you'll see that they are about equal, 59% for bicyclists and 64% for motorists. Now, the reason that adds up to more than 100% is because sometimes both parties are contributing something to the crash. Say one party will run a stoplight, the other party will have failed to yield the right-of-way when they are making a turn or something like that. What is causing these crashes more specifically under each category? For motorists, you'll see this on the left-hand side. There's a bar graph that has gray bars on it. And the most prevalent contributing factor after no clear factor, so just skip that one, because oftentimes there is no clear reason why people got in a crash, according to the enforcement officials, is failure to yield the right-of-way. And so what does failure to yield the right-of-way mean? If you look at the two drawings at the bottom of the sheet, you'll see two examples. One of a motorist taking a left turn on the left side, and then on the right side, a motorist taking a right turn. And the bicyclist can be in various positions when the motorist is making that left turn. You can see they can be on the street or on the sidewalk. They can be coming from both directions if they're on the sidewalk on the left side. And those are where the conflicts occur, and those are locations where oftentimes the motorist has not seen the bicyclist, and so they haven't yielded to them. And then similarly for the right-hand turn. For bicyclists, we've grouped a few different top contributing factors into this conclusion of bicyclists aren't riding in a predictable manner. And so again, if you take off no clear factor on the right-hand bar graph that has gray on it, the top three reasons are failure to yield the right-of-way, disregarding a traffic control device that can be running a stoplight or a stop sign, as examples, and improper lane use. And this is oftentimes riding the wrong way against traffic. When traffic is moving in one direction, the bicyclist is oftentimes, in this case, in that lane, facing the traffic going against them. So those are the main conclusions. The last point I'd make is where are crashes occurring? Previously, I mentioned that most of them are happening at intersections in Minneapolis. That's about 80% of crashes are happening within a 50-foot distance from the intersection. So they oftentimes are not between intersections where, when, say, a motorist is passing a bicyclist, they're more often when people are making turns or doing other things going through intersections. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's the conclusion.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I would like to ask a question.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to give you a specific instance because I've got it in mind. On Wooddale Avenue South, about 100 yards south of Highway 7, there is a trail and a train track. And I've been repeatedly told that, and there's a lot of those at grade crossings, that a bicycle does not have the right of way. And you talk about right of way here, at that specific type of crossing, what is the law on that? Who has the right of way, the motorist or the bicyclist?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that it's a complicated question as far as I understand it. Oftentimes it depends on what the traffic control devices are that are erected at the trail crossing. So for example, there will be oftentimes stop signs for the trail. And so it oftentimes gets into a lot of the specifics of each crossing. Different localities mark their trail crossings in different ways. So, for example, some will use crosswalks, others will not. Some will put up stop signs for the bicyclists. Some will put up stop signs for the motorists if there's a heavy bike movement crossing there. That's more rare, but it does happen. We have one instance of it in Minneapolis. It oftentimes depends on the situation would be how I would answer that question.
So, Madam Chair, we guess and move ahead at whatever speed we deem will nick the bicyclist, but only lightly. Is that what you're saying? I don't know. Okay, I accept that you got a judgment would say that the car should stop. I don't think there are any signs either way there. But, you know, if they don't have the right of way, then they're fair game, I guess.
Madam Chair, Representative. Representative Earhart, I understand your the frustration you have with it. We have made that decision at several of our trail crossings in Minneapolis to stop the motorist. I just said one, but as I was saying that, I was remembering another one where we've just changed it, so we have two of those where we have asked the motorist to stop. We've done that with stop signs, and then we give the trail the right of way. At other locations, we put a crosswalk in, but it is a complicated question. I'm sorry I can't give you a simple answer from my opinion.
Madam Chair, it seems to me there ought to be something in state law. If you're on the water, a swimmer has the right of way, a canoeist has the right of way over a sailboat, and a motorized has lesser degree. So I would think there'd be some way that you could determine either the bicyclist always has the right of way or he never has the right of way. That's all.
Mr. Murphy?
Thank you.
Any follow-up?
No.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Murphy, I have another right-of-way question kind of following Representative Earhart. And I'm looking at this example on this one specific sheet here. If there is a bike path that leads up to an intersection, now in this example, I'm going to assume that there is another bike path continuing on the opposite side, going straight ahead on this intersection, correct? Now, is that an actual legal lane for that bicyclist to go through the intersection, granted if it's red or whatever, and would at what point is this car that's going to be making this right-hand turn going to be crossing the question is that really a legal lane? Who has the right-of-way at that point? Because this is kind of an uncertainty to me. I've seen this many times at an intersection where sometimes even there are some of these arrogant bicyclists will come riding up, roaring through an intersection, expecting a right of way. But yet I don't even know who's really got the right of way. So could you explain that to me,
Mr. Murphy?
Madam Chair, Representative, we're actually going to get to that in the portion of the presentation that Mr. Wirtjes is going to give about. There's a handout that you're looking at that's different from the one that I was just going over, and your handout is requiring that drivers yield to bicycles before crossing a bike lane, and the driver's manual already addresses this, and we're here today to talk about how the law looks at it, so that will come when Mr. Wirtjes starts talking, unless you want us to jump into it right straight away.
If there are no more questions, proceed.
Madam Chair, I don't know if we want to introduce the bills first, or where do you want to go next with this? Because I think if there are specific questions about the safety report, we can continue to answer questions like that, but I'm glad to turn to whatever the committee would like to discuss next.
Okay. In that case, Representative Kahn, would you take the stand, please? The next item of business is House File 530. And I'd like to move that House File 530 before the committee. And I know there's an author's amendment. Does everybody have the amendment? Okay. And Representative Kahn, do you have anything to say before I move the amendment?
No. This just specifically clears up some language about turning it into sections on it.
Okay, it is 009.
It just does section 3 better.
Okay, what I have is A13-0090. Okay.
Yeah. And no, 9-2, I'm sorry. 9-2 is the one. 9-2 is the one that specifically deletes a section of 530 and puts in a better wording of it.
Okay. Okay, and also... We've got quite a few. Okay, the other one is... Can we start with A13-0092?
Yes, that one's really simple.
Okay. And now that the bill is before the committee, Representative Kahn, please proceed.
I'm going to, if you move that amendment, that would put it in the form that I want, and it's just the better way of section 2, of section 3.
Okay, so it has been moved. Okay. Okay. I would like to move the A13-0092 amendment. To get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. The bill passes as it's amended. Please proceed, Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, 530 has to deal with the turning it into sections and passing. And I guess I'd like to, rather than talk about it myself, I'd rather let these two guys on either side talk to it. I will say, though, that the turning at the intersection, that's riding a bicycle. Riding a car, I'm very alert to watching for bicycles. Riding a bicycle, those are the closest accidents that I've had. When I've been in a bike lane proceeding straight, and I assure you, I am not going straight at an impossible speed for anyone to see. And I've had a car turn in front of me. Each time it's happened, I've been able to turn with the car. At one point, my hand was on the car's door's handlebars as I was turning. We were that close. And what they always said two things. One, I didn't see you, or I didn't know you would be going that fast. And in all cases, I would never go up beside, believe me, I'm cautious. I haven't gotten to be this old without being a little cautious. But believe me, I would never go up alongside of a car that's parked or already in that lane. So these were all people who had come from behind me and then made the decision that they could then cross in front of me. But anyway, I'll let these two guys talk about it.
Madam Chair and committee members, maybe a best way to maybe approach this is with Senate File 530 or House File 530. Maybe take them in reverse order and hit the question that the representative asked the first time. So this Section 3 that we just talked about that was amended here really helps to clarify what is the procedure and intent of making a turn and how do you cross the bicycle lane. And so our changes here are attempted to clarify what's in statute already. We're not intending to make any change relative to that. And so effectively what occurs is as a bicycle, as a vehicle as well, has the shared responsibility along with the motorized vehicle to approach the intersection, and whoever gets there first has the right of way in this regards. And so we need to kind of look and be cognizant as both a biker and as a motorist to take the proper action. And so in that context, there may be different unique markings at each intersection as you're turning across that bicycle lane. It might be a dedicated crossing. It might be just some simple dashed lines relative to making that maneuver at a turn at an intersection. And so I think I'll maybe stop there and see if there are questions, Madam Chair, from your committee.
And for the record, would you identify yourself?
Sure. John Wirtz, Director of Traffic and Parking Services for the City of Minneapolis.
Are there any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Wishes. Question in regards to the right way of any approaching bicycles. I appreciate coming forward because bicycles never seem to win over with cars. Cars are always seem to be more prevalent. So appreciate that. The concern I have is when it says any approaching bicycles from crossing the bicycle lane, if I was stopped at a red light making a right, does that mean that I would need to make sure that I look at my rearview mirror and look around before crossing the bike lane in case there was any bicycles coming up? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how we determine, because that's, to me, that's the danger part for me, because if I'm stopped and there was never anybody there beside me, but somebody comes along and they're just pedaling away and then the light turns green and I don't know they're there, I can't really yield to them. So do you have any kind of parameters for us to know in that regard?
If you read the language carefully, you see you're supposed to have, when you're preparing to make that turn, you're supposed to have driven into the bicycle lane. And one of the problems that we've had is, I know in my area, sometimes the markings are not good. Minneapolis is now fixing all their markings so that at the end of a bicycle lane, as it hits an intersection, they're all dotted lines so that you're clear that you can go into that. So if you're making a right turn lane, you're supposed to be as close as the curb as possible. So you should not be on the outside of a bicycle lane. You should be on the inside. And most of the new markings are all, and replacing the old ones, are all have a dashed line so that it's clear you're supposed to go there. And that's just what the language says if you read the language.
In addition, Madam Chair and Representative, I would add this kind of simplistic approach to it. Not unlike a double travel lane, and there's two lanes going in one direction, and you're going to make the right turn. You're going to move over into that right lane when it's appropriate and when you can make that maneuver, whether there's a vehicle there or not. And so in this same context, as you turn right across the bicycle lane, you need to kind of understand the basic speed, 10 to 20 miles an hour of a bicyclist, and kind of judge that distance relative to is the vehicle approaching, in this case the bicycle is approaching, in a manner and make that judgment relative to making a safe maneuver.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for the clarification. I guess I wasn't aware that all bicycle lanes were on the road as well. Some of them, I think, are in curbed areas as well, in which it makes it a little bit more difficult for us to know that. And so I was kind of referring to some of those situations where it is a little bit more difficult to really know where you're at. But I think you've clarified it for me. Thank you.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one quick question as I read through this. What is the penalty for the driver for failure to yield if this occurs?
Madam Chair and Representative, assuming they get caught and there's an officer out there to write it, I'm assuming it would be a moving violation, not unlike any other moving violation with its appropriate penalty.
Okay, and so the penalty would be a ticket if there's an injury involved. Is there more to it? Like I said, as I read this, this is well written, but what, like I said, I just want to know for sure what the penalty is if there's a violation, if you're caught violating this. I think that needs to be included somewhere so that we know, or at least have a reference to the statute or what the penalty is for failure to comply with this if you're a driver.
Mr. Wirtges.
Madam Chair and Representative, like the other kind of moving violation activities that are within Chapter 169 here, it would fall under that, and so that ticketing and violation thing would correlate to that, so that is in statute already, so it wouldn't be changed from any other maneuver that you would be making out there. Yep. Okay. Thank you, Madam.
You are welcome. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that has any comments or questions? In that case, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 530, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion into the transportation policy omnibus bill.
No. Okay.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, if that's the way you're doing it, that's kind of fine. I have another bill. I also had another amendment to this bill.
Oh, okay.
A1390.
Which was
which
the
I don't know if you want to consider the amendment for inclusion in the omnibus, but if the amendment that I have, the 1391, which has to do mainly with equipment, and what it does is it brings our current bicycle laws up to date with respect to new kinds of bicycles and new equipments that people are using, and complications of the fact that bicycles are defined as vehicles, but yet they're not motor vehicles, so they're a little bit different. And so this was drawn up by the Minnesota Coalition of Bicyclists, who are here also. We also have that same amendment drawn up to House File 531. 531 is another bill that comes from Minneapolis. So the suggestion maybe is that you hear 531, and then the amendment is written to either 531 or 530, the same amendment, and also to introduce it as a bill also. But I think my suggestion would be that you hear 531, these same people will deal with 531, and then we'll hear the amendment, and then you can put it on either 530 or 531, or just whatever, hold the amendment for inclusion in the omnibus bill, if that's not too complicated.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is it is your pleasure that we go to 531 next.
To 531.
Okay.
Yes, we have the same.
And in that case, I would like to move Representative Kahn's bill 531. And okay. Do you want me to take the amendment at this point?
No. Let's deal with the bill, and then we'll deal with the amendment.
Okay. Proceed, please.
Yeah, because it's different people. So, yes, Madam Chairman, this bill is pretty simple. This bill just puts the same prohibition of parking on a designated bicycle lane that we have for other restrictive areas where it's complicated if people park. And again, these guys, whoever wants to talk about it.
Madam Chair, John
Wirtjes,
City of Minneapolis. I'm going to make a few introductory comments, but I think Sean Murphy here has prepared a handout, which I think we can run through, which really would help elaborate this one a little bit more. But basically what this provision does is in other statutes in state law, it is illegal to drive in the bicycle lane, but it is not illegal to park, stand, or stop in the bicycle lane. And so we wanted to be clear about that. And so with that, we've added some additions to this section 169.39, which is in, you know, House File 531. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Sean Murphy to kind of elaborate on this handout, which I think will be helpful for people to understand.
Mr. Murphy.
excuse me, Madam Chair and committee members. On the handout, which is titled Prohibiting Parking in Designated Bicycle Lanes, and perhaps there are two sides to it. So perhaps you're on the side that says continued. So make sure you're on, if it's two-sided, you're on the side that does not have continued under it. A vehicle, we believe, parked in a bicycle lane can potentially create an unsafe situation for bicyclists and for motorists, mainly because of the situations that we've illustrated down below, especially on the lower left. You can see in this situation a car is parked in the bicycle lane, which forces a bicyclist to leave the bike lane and go into the travel lane. Now, this is, of course, a simplified diagram. At times, it can be more complicated than this, and there are other cars approaching from the rear. And so that's where the conflict can oftentimes happen. So keeping bicycle lanes clear can increase the predictable riding of bicycling, which I mentioned earlier is a problem that we found in our analysis of crash reports. So on the lower right-hand side, we have the desired situation, which is a bike lane that is clear, so that there's no conflict between the car approaching from the left in that situation, from the left and from the rear. So on the right-hand column of this sheet, there's some of the language of the law which you have in front of you on a separate sheet of paper, but this basically says no person shall stop, stand, or park a vehicle in any of the following places. There are currently 14 locations. We're proposing to add a 15th. We've numbered it 14 here, but only to put it in front of the 15th one, or the new 15th one. The other locations include, for example, on a sidewalk in front of a driveway within an intersection. These are locations that we typically don't sign. We're proposing that bike lanes be also added to this list. I will note we have number 12 on here, which is persons are not allowed to park a vehicle on the roadway side of any vehicle stopped or parked at a curb, which in another phrase would be double parking. Double parking is not allowed. I'm going to refer to that on the bike's backside of this sheet with another diagram. But our proposed language is that we add a number 14, which says within a bicycle lane, except when posted signs permit parking. If you flip over to the backside of your sheet, you can see I was referring to the number 12 before, where you can't double park. The upper left-hand diagram shows someone double parked. We are not proposing to make any changes with this sort of a situation. This person would be in the bicycle lane, but they are also double parked, so they're already handled under state law. This is already prohibited. You can see an example photo at right of a delivery truck in a bike lane on a street in Minneapolis where they could have gone into the parking lane. One exception to note, this relates back to the earlier bill about parking maneuvers. We did add some clarifying language only to say that parking maneuvers are okay. We're not trying to restrict anyone from getting into a parking spot where they have to cross a bicycle lane. So that's just a clarification to note on here. And that's the conclusion of my remarks. I'm ready for questions if there are any.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Earhart.
On the continued side, this is a one-way street, I assume. Can't be two ways because there's no room for driving except, or is it a two-way street?
No.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a one-way street. This is Portland Avenue in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one other question. On the other side, both these examples are streets with no parking. And so I assume that in an area like that, you'd provide parking ramps for the cars as a consideration.
Mr. Murphy.
That there are cars around as well as bikes.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, this example, which is a somewhat unusual example where parking is not on either side of the street, this is on 15th Avenue Southeast, if you look at the photo above, right near the university. And in this situation, yes, we do have several areas with off-street parking, so that's always a consideration.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know who will answer this question, but there might be some instances when delivery trucks or things being delivered to one's home or business might be impacted by this. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Mr. Murphy? Or who? I'm seeing questions.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, I think that it is possible that there will be deliveries in bike lanes. There are oftentimes deliveries in travel lanes, and that is already prohibited by state statute. But this is oftentimes up to the discretion of an enforcement official, and there are instances where it is not possible for a delivery truck to pull off of the street, and I would assume that that there are exceptions made out in the field by people who are actually trying to make these laws work on a daily basis.
Thank you. Madam Chair?
Oh, Mr. Wirtjes.
Representative, in addition to that, I think the way we've got the language stated in item 14 here with the addition is a way to address that issue would be except where posted. And so frequently Minneapolis would post a sign to allow certain types of loading types of activities or unloading types of activities in unique locations. And so I think we can address a number of those questions in that manner.
Are there any other questions? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. as I look over this bill, I have to ask a question. The first bill about the right-of-way, I think that's sound. I see the wisdom in that with riding, with injuries, and with the right-of-way. When I look at the parking bill, and I look at the authors of this, it appears to me that the authors are mostly from the metro or they're from Minneapolis, correct me if I'm wrong, and that the examples and the discussion we've been having about this parking issue has all been Minneapolis-oriented. How does this fill out with the rest of the state? I mean, when we get to a point where the state is telling you where you can park your car, isn't that a decision that should be left up to the small? Why does the state have to tell us where we can park and not park? That, to me, seems like a city council issue. What works in Minneapolis doesn't work in Becker. That's where I'm from. Might not work in Duluth. It might not work in Dilworth, Minnesota. I mean, what we're doing here is the state is telling people where they cannot park. This is a huge jump. When we're talking about the right-of-way and we're talking about people riding their bikes and not getting hit by cars and observation, I get that, okay? But where I can and cannot park my car in Hibbing, Minnesota, because the state says I can't park my car there, I think this is a big kind of a stretch. I really do, and I can't support the state telling me where I can park my car. Now, I've been listening to what you've been saying about Minneapolis and the metro. You folks live there, and you're spot on. Okay, you guys live there. You're the experts. So would this not be something, 531, wouldn't this be better a discussion to have with the city council instead of the state? Thank you.
Mr.
Let them say it, and then I'll say something. Okay.
Madam Chair and Representative, very good question. We would agree with that, and even Minneapolis is interested in local control. Right. And in this case, local control is still preserved. In that regards, one, the bicycle lane doesn't go in unless the local community wants the bicycle lane in place. And we've got this conversation in our city, as I'm sure Becker or Hibbing do as well. There is a question about, do you want a travel lane, a bike lane, and parking? Can all of them fit or can't they fit, and where do you trade that off? And that's what's done at the local level with each of the communities in order to sort that out. And so we think this is a may condition, so if you've got the bike lane, then the parking is prohibited. And if you flip to the front side of the bill, there's a whole set of other locations where you're prohibited from parking your vehicle as well. So close to an intersection, so close to a stop sign. And so we were trying to provide some uniformity across the state so people understood where not they could park their car. So I hope that helps. I don't know if the Representative Kahn or others had additional comments.
That was just what I wanted to say. You would not ever have a designated bicycle lane without the locality having approved of it. And the ability to post signs, you know, to deal with possible difficult solutions would be right. This terrible if you go, any of you who've been either biking or driving on, or parking on, going to something like the Target Center or Hennepin and First, you've got bike lanes against the curb, you've got bike lanes against the curb and park lanes, then between the traffic and the bike lanes, you've got parking against the curb and then the bike lane out, and you got to be awfully alert to do it. But it's really hard. You know, I've done it riding to Target Center, say, for example, you're in that bike line with these nice cars parked on your outside, which once you get used to it, is a very safe place to be, and then suddenly there's a car that's parked against the curb. And, you know, there's no excuse for it. There's signs all over, you can see the other cars and all sorts of things. So people just have to be alert. And if you're thinking about doing that, I stop and call 911 whenever I hit that and then argue with them about why it's a serious thing that they should pay attention to.
So. Mr. Murphy, did you have a response as well?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Neuberger, as you might be able to imagine, too, even in Minneapolis, parking is very important. And I've been involved in several local community meetings where we had to have those tough discussions about whether we keep the parking or not. Some cases we can keep the parking, and it's not really a problem. But in some cases, we do have to make a decision between the two if we want a bike lane. And there's been situations where, for example, we'll have a place of worship, and there won't be a huge demand for the parking except on certain times on a Sunday. And so then we will post exceptions to that. So we have found that there are ways to work around some of those concerns that come up, and I imagine that other local municipalities all around the state, including the metro, are dealing with it in similar ways.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, I totally get what you're saying with Minneapolis and the green bike lanes, and I've driven down there in traffic. I get it. You are right. Okay. But the spirit of this bill, the context of this bill, then says if a city or a small community builds bike lanes, then this would apply, correct?
Well, the if it's a designated bike lane, okay, which means it's either curbed or painted or something, okay, and then except, but they can post it to permit parking. If you look at that language,
okay.
So and just describing the situation for churches and things like that. So I think, you know, I think one of it is it might be a warning to communities if they don't have a lot of them, that there are some requirements when you do it, and so think about it before you do it. Is probably a good idea.
No more questions. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just kind of a follow-up for Representative Rosenthal's question, and forgive me, I don't know the language as very well, but I'm assuming that emergency vehicles and so forth would have access to stop there. And I know in one
sidewalks too.
Yeah, exactly. And in some of these examples where it's either traffic lane or bike lane, we do know that there's emergency situations that occur. Is that something that is allowed, I mean, somewhere, or is that just kind of up to the discretion of the enforcement there, too? And I'm sorry, I don't know that right off hand.
Well, Representative Kahn?
At the first thing, the first page, so in compliance with the directions of a police officer or a traffic control device, I think that would take care of it. The police officer, if there's a police vehicle, you assume there's a police officer that, yeah.
Representative Petersburg. Okay, are there any other questions? Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, Representative Kahn. I guess I'm just a little bit curious of then, you know, talking about the posting and the being able to post exemptions. Why isn't this able to, or why is it a problem to simply post no parking in areas where you want to maintain the free flow bike lane? I'm just curious if that's come up and what's the hang up to make that a problem.
I think you're looking at a lot more signs than just having the concept. But to do a designated bike lane, you paint the stripe, and that's a lot cheaper than posting signs every place saying no parking if you want it. So just having a general rule about it, and as we pointed out in the example to Representative Rosenthal's question, at some point somebody's got to use some discretion, like a delivery vehicle for a house. You know, if there's a restaurant or something that has a lot of delivery vehicles, then you could do a permanent posting. But there are just places already in the law where a delivery vehicle may have to park in a traffic lane.
Sure.
Already is there. So in some places you have to rely on the discretion of people being smart about it.
Okay. So,
delivery, you know, that's often just looking at minutes instead of parked all day or something. So that's the kind of thing.
So it's really just that the feasibility of that amount of signs is just prohibitive? Is that?
Well, it's just feasible.
Yeah.
Let them do it. But it seems to me it's simpler to just paint the line.
Okay.
Instead of the number of times we have to say that there's no parking.
Representative Fitzsimmons, do you have a follow-up?
No. I thought the testifier was maybe.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Orsches.
In addition to Representative Kahn's statement about the bicycle signage requirements or the parking signage requirements, I think the other message that I think this change brings forth is the key component that we're telling folks that the bicycle lane is a travel lane and it's not a parking lane. And so we've stated in other places in statute that it's illegal to drive in the bicycle lane, but we're trying to educate the communities and their citizenry as well with that broad statement.
Sure. So I think okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kahn, how would you like to proceed from here?
You know, actually, maybe we need Mr. Burris to help us. But I'd like to, you're holding these bills over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Exactly.
I'd like you to do the same with this one, and then we can deal with, can you hold an amendment over for inclusion in the omnibus bill? Or should I put the amendment on the bill and you'll cover it at the same time? What should we do?
Madam Chair and members.
Mr. Burris.
That approach could be up to the committee either way. The language could be considered by the committee as just a point of discussion. Probably the most typical way would be for someone to move the amendment and discuss the amendment in the context of this House file, and then, you know, as the omnibus bill is brought forth, the language could be included or not.
Okay. So I guess, Madam Chairman, I'd like someone to move for me. And then this is a different group of people. This is 813-089. I would like someone to move that amendment, I guess, to 531.
Madam Chair, I'll move that amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
And now I'd like to introduce another testifier who's from the Coalition of Bicyclists. Sorry, I've been here for 40 years and I've never done anything quite this complicated with such simple, pretty simple subjects. So if you guys are confused, I'm just okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. The Minnesota Coalition of Bicyclists was our predecessor. And before I start, let me just share a couple simple concepts that Mr. Wirtjes got to right at the end. Think of a bicycle lane as a driving lane that's just simply too narrow to drive a car in. You need to merge into it when you're turning across it, just like you're merging into the right-hand or left-hand lane when you're turning your car. And the other concept is that bicyclists fare best when they act and are treated like the drivers of vehicles. So yielding the right-of-way, a bicyclist, the only difference a bicyclist has between a motor vehicle driver is they're supposed to operate their bicycle as far to the right as practicable. Otherwise, they have the same rights and responsibilities as the driver of a motor vehicle. So think of that, and we obviously have a lot of education to do with both bicyclists and motorists about bicycle lanes. But I just made a quick, Bemidji has designated bicycle lanes. Moorhead has designated bicycle lanes. Duluth, Winona, Hutchinson, La Crescent, Jackson, and Grand Marais. So they're all over the state. And I think they are, as the gentleman from Minneapolis pointed out, a safety feature and something that people are going to use more and more in the future. So to the A130089 amendment, the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota has worked very hard on reviewing the 169, Minnesota Statute 169.222, and trying to recommend some updates that make it more consistent with current practices, safety, and the technology that's and some really unusual things. Bicycle bells technically are illegal, and there's no place in statute that says you can actually ride your bicycle on a shoulder of a roadway. The roadway is defined to the left of the white line, and there's no place in statute that specifically says you can operate your bicycle to the right of the white line if there's a shoulder on that road. So I'll quickly go through the amendment. Manner and number of riding. Tandem bicycles have been around for a long, long time, but cargo and utility bicycles have not. They are being designed to have running boards and platforms on the back and handlebars so kids can ride on the back of them just like they're riding on a tandem bicycle. And we need to make it clear in the statute that those can be designed for more than one person. The riding rules, again, that's where I mentioned we need to just make it clear in the statute because some county engineers are refusing to sign a bicycle route on the shoulder of a road because they feel they'd be liable because nowhere in statute does it say a bicycle can ride on that shoulder. Well, let's make it easier for those county engineers and the county attorneys. The next page, page 2, right at the bottom on the right, bicycle equipment. This talks about reflectors and headlights as a requirement. But some bicyclists now, blinking taillights have become very, very affordable, and I think they are much more visible than a rear reflector. But right now, my bicycle is illegal if I ride it after night or after dark. I have two blinking taillights on it, but no rear reflector. I feel I'm much safer with two blinking taillights or one blinking taillight that you can see from at least 500 feet. So we'd like to recommend that change to the statute. The other is that the definition of a brake, believe it or not, technically the way this is written, a coaster brake, which many of us grew up riding, is not a legal brake on a bicycle. So, and a fixed gear, a bicycle with a fixed gear drivetrain, which can make the wheel skid on dry pavement, is not a legal braking mechanism either. And then line F on page 3, it simply says that a bicycle may be equipped with a bell. And then the 169.68, the horn or siren, has a redundant statement in there. It is permissible for a bicycle to be equipped with a horn or bell. So those are my simple recommendations. Those were made by a law professor from Hamline University and the corporate attorney for Quality Bicycle Products in Bloomington, who also serves on the National Uniform Vehicle Code Committee as their bicycle representative. So that's where these recommendations came from, trying to make it consistent and more safe with current practices.
Thank you. Members, Representative Hornstein has moved Amendment A130089. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
The motion is adopted. Representative Kahn, where would you like to proceed?
Again, we're now ready to go, I guess.
Okay.
And I guess as you're assembling your omnibus bill, if you understand that these three things are kind of all, they all go together, but they're also all separable, so you can figure it all out then.
Okay.
But they all make sense.
Okay, and in that case, I would like to move House File 531 as amended. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Oh, I'm sorry. We are laying it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so very much.
Madam Chair, I had a question. I missed.
Oh, you did
Representative Earhart?
530, didn't you?
I have a bike with one of those bulbs on it that has a horn on it. Goes whoop, whoop. Is that satisfactory? It doesn't exactly meet your...
Yes, now it is. It is interesting with some of these bills. We put in a bill last year, which was passed in the omnibus bill, I think, which allowed one of the complications, one of the good things about our law is that we treat bicycles as vehicles. Every once in a while, it doesn't make any sense. It turns out, but we've prohibited studded tires on all vehicles for good reason, but there was no good reason to prohibit them on bicycles. And so we finally allowed them on bicycles last year, and Gary Carlson, who's from the League of Cities, I think, he rides his bicycle. He's been riding his bicycle 20 miles each way all year, including in winter. When that bill went in, he came to me and said, "It's illegal." So we fixed it for him, so it's now legal. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. The Transportation Policy Committee is now adjourned.